Raider Nation Radio here on your Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Vinny and Clay here on Raider Nation Radio 920. Hit us up on the text line 702-365-9200. And I'll tell you what, do yourself a favor, go and get the LV Sports Network app. It is free to use, free to download up at the Apple Store or Google Play. It streams on iPhone and Android seamlessly. No problems, no hiccups. Get the LV Sports Network app. That way you can stream and you can get our law podcast all in one spot here on Raider Nation Radio. We'll be talking to Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports soon. We'll also talk to Rob Meisch at 9 o'clock, writer and author. We'll talk to him about Major League Baseball, the All-Star Game, and a lot of stuff that's happening in and around the sports world this time of the year. Also hit us up for the qualifications for the Summer of Fun by Planet Nissan. It's so easy. All you have to do is text the word travel to 702-365-9200. You qualify for the 7-day cruise to Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. Do it right now. Text the word travel here to 702-365-9200.
So Clay, yesterday I get home from work, and yesterday was probably Christmas Day for my son, Noah.
Oh, even before Amazon Prime days begin?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
No doubt about it. College football, EA, the new College Football 25 came out. And when I say that Noah's been counting the days till when he was finally able to download it, I don't know if he downloaded it the night before or yesterday, but yesterday was full blown. He's playing, right? And it's summer vacation for him. He does work as a part-time job, so he's not just schlepping around, not doing anything. And this is the time of year for kids his age to after it on the computer game. And so, I'm watching him. And this is a spectacular game. Anyone that hasn't, gone out and gotten in, if you're a fan of gaming and if you're an old head that played college football back in the day and want to get back into it, they've done some spectacular things, and it's kind of updated with the transfer portal and everything. So yesterday, for at least 3 hours, he was, and I said, you know what,
okay.
I'm gonna let you do your thing, man. I get it, I understand it. So, first of all, it's blazing hot outside. So, what are you gonna do? Go outside and melt. It's okay.
What are you gonna do? Take his joy away and say like, no,
definitely not doing that. And so. I guess there's a he was doing a UNLV rebuild. He goes to UNLV, so he's getting ready to start his sophomore year. So I'm watching him, and he's like, you know what? I just figured I'm gonna rebuild UNLV using the transfer portal, doing everything that is at his disposal to be able to build a good program. And the way his schedule worked out with the UNLV schedule, I think they started with Alabama. It was three tough games, man. Might have been Alabama and then Ohio State and someone else.
Yeah, that's great. Like Georgia or whatever, just powerhouse city, Notre Dame.
I'm going to whip them into shape. I know that they're going to lose, but we're going to try to make it competitive. I was like,
yep, we'll get a paycheck here.
I love you, Noah. anyway, I was able to just watch. I sat and watched. I wasn't a big gamer in my day, so.
Oh, but it was fun to watch people's gameplay yesterday from the college football EA Sports.
For sure.
Especially the one for UNLV, because it showed a packed Allegiant Stadium with all the red.
Yeah.
For the Rebel fans, and I was like, oh, this is terrific. And somebody was showing me, calling in from Denver, that how bad the Colorado Buffaloes offensive line even looked on the game as opposed to what it did look like last year, which was also just as putrid.
Last year was I felt so bad for Shador, and he was running for his life, and it was obvious even when they were struggling against they beat Colorado State. I want to say that was an overtime game, or it was just a barn burner. But I was like, this is going to catch up to them. If they can't block Colorado State, nothing against Colorado State, but you are a Pac-12 team, you should be able to block a lower-level defensive line. And they were...
It's a blood rivalry, man.
They had their hand... I don't care about that.
It's like... They,
you ought to be able to handle Colorado State. So, I'm not saying
those
that.
Games should be played at the end of the year now, I'm starting to think, because it's just Colorado State, that's what they gear up for.
Yeah,
they want to
win
that
it.
Game.
I get it. But from a physicality, you could tell that they were just undermanned on the offensive line.
Oh, absolutely. And the trenches?
So much as motivate or anything like that. And I give Colorado State all the credit, but... They were getting ravaged on the offensive line, and it was and you knew that day was coming where they just weren't going to be able to handle whoever they were playing. So I'm hoping for the young quarterback and for Deion that they got some of that fixed on the offensive line, because I want to see Shador play behind a good offensive line. I want to see what he does playing to his strength, which is literally standing in the pocket and making throws. He did what he could as a playmaker, somebody that scrambled and made plays, but you don't want your quarterback having to live that in that world all the damn time. And his strength is literally sitting back in the pocket and picking apart defenses. He's extremely smart, obviously the son of a football player and now a football coach. He knows the game. You know, who do you think he's going to turn to about defensive coverages, pass coverages, than the greatest to ever do the game, and to not just from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint? Deion Sanders would take you out of the game from a mental standpoint before he even stepped on the field. He knew every trick that you had and had tricks to offset your tricks and knew what it was all about. So you got to figure that Shador is getting that side of the game from his dad as well. So I just want to see him have a chance out there because I think he's a really good young quarterback.
All right, let's find out from Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports, NFL analyst, college football analyst, UNLV child prodigy, Grammy winner. You hear him on the Stradivarius right there, and he's with us on Tuesdays here on Raider Nation Radio. Jason, thank you for joining us. We're just kind of like mentioning how crazy the college football EA Sports game drop happened yesterday, but at the same time, the observations that come out on how sometimes games will reflect reality, not unlike how the Colorado Buffaloes offensive line still can't protect Shador Sanders in the game as it is present last year. How do you feel like Shador Sanders has to go and like rise above all that to go even further, not only to help the Buffaloes win, but to go and find himself in that stratified era as being a top pick in the draft?
So I love the conversation I just heard you guys having on Shador. And the complication with Shador is it's hard to evaluate when your offensive line is as bad as his was last year. So, you know, if you look at it, he held the ball too long. He waited a long time to get things done. He ran around too long behind the line of scrimmage, but also he was running for his life, and he wasn't getting any help from that offensive line on dissecting what was coming at him. Mm-hmm. So I think the evaluation of Shador right now is a little complicated, right? So, but my complication with Shador is, man, he has, because his dad is Deion, and he learned from his dad to just have that swagger, that's part of what makes him great. But you got to know when you're a quarterback that you make a joke like that about your offensive line on the release of the most highly anticipated video game of a generation, that's going to become a clip, right? Like, just imagine how we would be reacting right now if it was Josh Allen saying something about his receivers in a video game. You know, ooh, if it was Patrick Mahomes saying something about his offensive line the year they lost the Super Bowl in a video game. We would be losing our minds. And where Shador seems to have a bit of a disconnect is, like, he's loving this swaggy, like, I'm a Sanders and this is what we do. But we want our quarterbacks to stand up, do better, be better when it comes to the way that they're viewed around their teammates.
Yeah, and it was an unfortunate statement. I think he probably wishes he had that one back a little bit. And by the way, it's a computer game. We'll see what actually happens on the field. To my knowledge, they addressed the offensive line, whether it was through the transfer portal or some high-end recruiting. So I think it'll be better, but I'm with you, Jason. I want to see Shador behind a decent offensive line, because I really do think he brings, I think people are missing the boat a little bit on him in terms of what his real strengths are. You know, you see the swagger and the athletic ability, all of which is really fine, but he's a guy that is a precision. He's more of a CJ Stroud than anything else, but he wasn't allowed to be that because he wasn't given the opportunity to just sit back there and do what he can do with a good offensive line, or let's just say an improved offensive line. What do you think the ceiling is for Sanders? And do you think that there's a chance that he's going to be one of those top quarterbacks taken?
Yeah, 100% he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks taken. I'd be stunned if he isn't. And his ceiling is, frankly, showing off that he can be, you know, you said CJ. I think he's a little bit of a combo of CJ and a little bit of a combo of a Lamar. Like, he runs really effectively, you know. So the ceiling for him is a Heisman and getting that sort of love and a first overall draft pick. But where I think it realistically sits in, I think the one thing he's got to do is he's got to stay calm late in these games where things are falling apart and not try to play hero ball. We all know that. But Colorado, the problem last year, because you're right, and the offensive line should be better this year. But the problem is last year, it felt like if he wasn't lights out every single play, then all of a sudden they lose. And that's such pressure to put on the kid in the way he plays the game. So, look, if the best case scenario, if you're a Raiders fan right now and you're looking at quarterbacks this year, the best case scenario is that Shador plays absolutely lights out, that Quinn Ewers goes out and keeps Arch Manning on the bench. Like, we need these kids to come out and show that they can have that massive leap just in case the team is in the quarterback market in a year. We want to make sure that there's a kid that can play. And modern NFL offense, like the way Shador plays the position, certainly, and the intelligence that he's learned football-wise from his dad, like, certainly, you just feel like you can't bet against that.
It's Jason Fitz here with us on Raider Nation Radio. Follow him at Jason Fitz on X and jasonfitz.com. Going to the other spectrum of maybe how receivers can really start to change the game, can I get your thoughts on how you've reviewed Davante Adams in the docuseries Receiver on Netflix?
I think what you learn in that process is just how amazing Davante is and just how even keel Davante is in his personal life and just how passionate he is on the field.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what, like everybody keeps reacting to him saying, you know, I'm getting killed out there. But, you know, to me, I kept looking at some of the little moments where he'd be jogging off the field after a bad drive and Max would be like, hey, keep it up. Like, we got you. Like, there's something about Davante that's cool, calm, that I think really comes through in receiver. But also, my God, and just go back and watch, because I binged the whole thing in one day. Go back and watch at the line of scrimmage, his ability to keep his arms moving and his feet moving. Like, you have no idea where he's going to go in every route. Like, that's just a beautiful thing to watch. And it's just, we're looking at art. We need to start accepting the fact that when you have the Mount Rushmore lexicon of, oh my God, greatest receivers of all time, when they played with the Raiders, I'm not talking about Randy Moss mailing it in for a year, when they played with the Raiders, I think Davante has proven that he's a Hall of Famer. He's going to end up on that Mount Rushmore of best Raider receivers during their Raiders career of all time, which is saying something when you're talking about the Biletnikoffs and the Tim Browns and the Jerry Rices during that period.
Yeah, and the thing that really jumped out to me since you know, being able to get my eyes on him pretty much on a daily basis, especially during mini camps and training camps, is that he has this ability to make something that is extremely hard look very easy. And I always equated it to like Michael Jackson. Go try to do what Michael Jackson was doing. He made that look easy, right? Because he was so good at it and worked so hard at it. And that's hard to do. And I don't know if people necessarily appreciate that about him. But at the same time, Jason, and I know we've been running into this now, especially recently with Aaron Rodgers saying what he said, that he can't wait to play with Davante Adams again. And people watched what Davante said, you know, on the sidelines, expressing some frustrations. And maybe they've got their timelines mixed up. But it feels like a lot of people feel like he wants out. If Davante Adams wanted out, he would have said a long time ago, hey, I want out. And the Raiders probably would have accommodated him. And they would have worked out something amicably where he went on his way. He doesn't want out. So let's just squash that right now. But I ask you this, Jason Fitz, is there a point in time, maybe even this season, where you could envision Davante saying, you know, this just isn't working and I'm running out of time and I want to go find something that's going to be able to maximize what I still have left in this game at a higher level? Is there a scenario out there that could occur?
So the only way that happens is if the season, the wheels fall off completely. And this turns into an epic disaster of a year, and they know by the trade deadline they're completely out of it. But this is the thing that I would, you know, challenge. And we talked about this before last season, and I'm always really honest with people. And I resurveyed. But last year, before the season last year, I asked a bunch of insiders I trust, what would the trade market value for Davante be? Mm-hmm. And the answer I got across the board, the best answer I got from anybody, was a high second rounder. Mm-hmm. And that's because of his age and because of his contract. Well, I went back and resurveyed everybody and said, has the value changed? No, there's just nothing here. When you start talking about what they will get in return, the Raiders are not going to get a bounty of first-round picks. I know fans don't want to hear that, but right. It's just real because of the age and the contract. Okay. Like, you're going to have a team that acquires him in midseason that has the space to do it. And then what are they going to give up that's actually going to make it worthwhile? So unless AP wants to just do a favor for Davante at that point and says, hey, I know you don't want to be here, we're going to give you the opportunity to play somewhere else and be kind, I don't see anything happening this season. I think it's way more likely, you know, knowing that there are outs in the contract, I think it's way more likely in a year or after next season when they say, okay, you know, I could see this season not going the way Davante wants. And Davante saying very clearly, I don't want to be here unless you guys address the quarterback position. And then that influences the beginning of free agency. Let's see what the Raiders do. And if Devontae's happy with it, they work out a way to restructure the remaining money on the contract. I think that's a fair and reasonable expectation of what could happen. I just don't think there's anything. Like, you want to tell me, even if you're sitting at the trade deadline and you've only got three wins or whatever, is that worth, you know, getting rid of your best player for a second round or third round pick? I don't think so.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, it's in the back of your mind as a possibility. We're speaking with Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports, because even when I was watching receiver and there was that period between the Steelers game and the Chargers game where Devontae was getting throttled, and I remember writing in my notes at the time, like, worst case scenario, who becomes a wide receiver one if Devontae gets hurt, you know, and can't go? And it was astounding, his ability to resurface out of injury and playing hurt. It was amazing to watch. He's just an incredible athlete. But does Jakobi Meyers become that de facto wide receiver one? And how effective do you think he can be? Because maybe we haven't really seen the untapped potential of what Meyers could be.
I think on most teams right now, Jakobi would be a number one. And when you talk about the draft, I want to remind everybody that most great GMs are drafting with a window of 2 to 3 years in their mind of what's coming out, right? So let's look back at the draft pick of Brock Bowers that we've talked so much about. Well, if you're the Raiders, it makes pretty good sense to look around and say, hey, we got this weapon here. It can make us really versatile on offense. It makes us dynamic right now. And if in a year we're in a spot where things aren't where we want them to be, or we won't have Devontae, then we got Jakobi sliding in to be the number one. Hopefully some of the guys have stepped up and really grown into the number two option, but also we have Brock and Michael Meyer to be our tight end room. Like, suddenly you feel better about it. I think what did we learn from day one with Tom Telesco? And this is where I love the puzzle, right? If you look at the move of signing Gardner Minshew, I'm going to continue to say loudly, I think that was one of the smartest offseason additions by any NFL team. And the reason why is because the Raiders told you right there, we don't love our quarterback room, but we're not sure we're going to be able to address it in the draft because you never know how the board's going to fall. So we're going to protect ourselves with a contract that is fine. We can get out of it if we need to. It's not that big a deal. And we give ourselves a second option. I thought that was brilliant planning for the what-ifs of the future. I think we need to acquiesce. That seems to be part of what Telesco is doing here. Like, so you draft Brock Bowers, it certainly gives you Devontae doesn't want to be here. We don't want to pay that money. We're going to move on from Devontae, but we're in a better situation because Jakobi is clear cut, I think, a number one. And I think by the end of this season, Brock Bowers is going to be, he's going to have a Sam LaPorta-like impact.
Yeah, I agree. And we're talking to Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports. Jason, I felt like the wide receiver Netflix series was very well done. I learned a lot. It was great to see all the various personalities, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Justin Jefferson, Devontae, et cetera, et cetera. But it got me to thinking, all right, and I felt like it was better than the quarterbacks. I liked the receivers one better than the quarterback one, and I liked the quarterback series. But it got me thinking, what do I want to see next, right? And so I got a text yesterday. I happened to make a cameo appearance, so there was an NFL head coach who saw it. He texted me, and he was like, oh, my boy, getting some cameo.
Yeah, you know, and blah, I heard blah, blah, blah. You, Jason, on that
Jason
series,
was
too.
On there. Yeah. Jason was on there as well. And I haven't, I gave the ha-ha, caught me by surprise, but I want to reach out to him or re-reach out to him here today to find out if he would be interested, because I want to see I think a head coach would be good. I think it would be great to see an in-season head NFL coach series. You get, five different head coaches in the NFL and do the same. It's the same kind of concept just with a head coach. Is that something that would fire you up, A, and B, do you think it has any legs whatsoever that coaches would actually agree to do that?
I think coaches are so paranoid, they probably stay away from it, but I think it's a brilliant idea by you. Like, you want to give a real insight into an organization, give me, instead of quarterback, receiver, now it's just give me coach.
Right.
And my God, you've got enough personalities. Like, if you could get AP, you could get Dan Campbell, you could also get, like, Mike McDaniel. You could get enough guys there that, man, all of a sudden you'd learn so much. Sean McVay, you'd learn so much about what the actual week looks like for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most impressive things, is that we get a better sense of the prep that goes in and the work that goes in and the personalities of the guys. And not for nothing, y'all, like, Omaha Productions being run by Peyton Manning, part of the reason this continues to happen as a series is because athletes know that Omaha is going to treat them right. They're going to make sure that they come across in the right light, and we all as an audience feel like it's not as, it's not as, boiled down as NFL films is, right? Like, it's more real content. So, yeah, I think coaches are great. I've seen all the – I hadn't even thought of coaches. That's the best idea yet. Like, well, don't give me corners. Give me coaches.
Yeah, and I'm telling you right now, you just named about six different coaches. I think four of those guys would probably say yes because they're comfortable enough in their own skin, from McVay to, you know, the Dan Campbell out there in Detroit, you know, a Kyle Shanahan, a Mike McDonald from Miami. I think there actually are some younger coaches who kind of understand it and kind of get it that would be okay with you know, pulling back the curtain on themselves a little bit.
If we could get that, you know how much better understanding we'd have of mm-hmm. what the job actually is? And that's the thing, like, like most of us sit here and we look at coordinators. Every time a coordinator becomes a head coach, we're like, well, you know, like Mike McDonald, who, by the way, should always have to sing, you know, Doobie Brothers songs when he goes to the press conference. Like Mike coming in as a head coach in Seattle, everyone's like, yeah, look at those defenses. Okay, well, his job's totally different now. And we all know that, but show me that. Like, show me the difference in what the day looks like for a head coach, because we keep hearing, well, they're in charge of everything. Okay, well, what's that really mean? Like, what's a day in the life of a coach would be absolutely incredible, and they'd get footage because those guys are in the office, you know, for 3,000 hours a day.
One other thing that I'm going to add to it, sorry to ambush this whole interview here, but one thing I would add to it is that I think the human side that comes out of it, because you'd obviously see them with their families, and they do have families. They're actually human beings. They actually have feelings, and they hear all this stuff. And as you said, alluded to, they're under a lot of pressure, and there is some paranoid, elements to that job. But I do wonder if the general public was able to be privy to that and see that side of them, if they'd be a little bit less quick on the fire this guy, fire that guy, get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy, when you really and truly understand there's a human element behind all of this.
I think, honestly, access creates understanding in general.
Yeah.
Transparency creates compassion. And so many times, like, if you are a league or a team or any of these things and you really want people to understand the individuals that work with you, the more you show behind the scenes stuff, the better it is. Like, look how infatuated we are with any draft day video, even for picks we don't like. When you see, you know, everybody coming in and talking about it, you're like, oh God, yeah, this is, inject this in my veins, right? Like, if you start to see more of the personality, like I saw the scouting combine clips on Hard Knocks of, you know, Dable sitting there talking about how fast he could run the 40. I want to know more about guys like that.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, Antonio Pierce as a coach, like, okay, we can see the locker room snippets and figure out why it's connecting. But, man, if you could see what it's like every day, mm-hmm. you get a much better understanding of what makes him connect with players, which then, by the way, would make us, I think, more qualified to look at other guys and say, okay, how does it, instead of just judging the press conference, you can look at it and say, okay, I sort of understand who this guy is and why it will connect.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Oh, boy.
Give me some Michael McDonald, Jason. Can you do some Mike McDonald?
Oh, I got no Michael McDonald. I wish I did. I did play with him once, though. Like, one time, so I played with him a couple of times in my life, once when I was a little kid, but once at this church. It was Christmas Eve service in Leapers Fork, Tennessee, which is like the middle of nowhere, and he's playing this mega church, and he's playing these songs. And, like, man, Michael McDonald's chords are really hard to follow on the piano. So, like, it was a couple songs he wrote, and I was, like, I was just me and him. I'm playing the violin along with him.
Oh, cool.
And so, like, we'd done this, like, rehearsal, and I went back to, like, the green room sort of area in the back of the church, and I was working on the song. And, like, just as the door cracks open for them to let us know that we're ready to go out on stage, I messed a part of it, and I just went on an obscenity-laced tirade because I was frustrated with myself. And I look over, and there's Michael McDonald standing next to the pastor. And I'm like, guys, I'm ready to go stand in front of the congregation and play right now. We all said. There we go. So,
yeah, there's a halo above your head right there. It's like everybody's looking down and like, oh.
How much empathy for Ingrid Andress did you have yesterday? The national
anthem? You know who I blame for all of that? I blame her team.
Yeah.
Like, her people need to know that she can't sing that thing.
Right.
Like, and you just got to be able to be like, I don't care if we're talking about life or music. I'm just telling you, you need to have a friend or a person in your circle that will look at you and be like, hey man, getting fat. Like, you need that in your life.
Yeah.
You need somebody that will look at you and be like, when you order, you're like, I'm going to order a milkshake. No, man, no, you don't need that. Like, we all need that person. Ingrid needs to figure out when in her management team, who it is that's supposed to look at her and be like, hey, that's not really going to work out great for you. Like, she put, like, her team put her in that situation because she's obviously oblivious to how bad it was. So, terrible. And by the way, would have been better on a violin.
And I
agree.
Because it's a hard song to sing and she's just not, that's not her cup of tea, basically. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a ton of range to sing the national anthem. It really does. You got to have a certain type of voice to sing the national anthem. And then this is one thing we always learned with the band. If you're going to sing the national anthem, understand that most of the outcomes are bad. If you do a great job, people will be like, oh, that was nice. And they'll cheer for it. And then most of the time they'll forget about it unless you're one of the two or three unforgettable performances.
Wow.
The rest of the time, man, you hit a bad note, you say a wrong word, you mess it up, you're going to be a viral sensation. That's why I sang it years ago when I was younger. And now, like, the only way I ever want to do it is playing it on fiddle, because at least there, I control more of the variables that way. And it's a cool, different way to do it. Like, when I did it for the Raiders in Oakland, like, it was so different. You know, when I've done it, in Nashville at different sporting events, it's so different that people are like, oh, that's kind of cool. So you get more benefit of that. You're just going out to sing it, man. You're hosed from the minute you walk in the door.
It goes back to a conversation I had with the great Greg Maddux. And we were talking about pitching, hitting, you know, and attacking hitters. And I forget exactly what I said, but he stopped and turned. He goes, Vinny, all of them have holes in their swing. Everybody has a hole in their swing. And as a pitcher, you know that. And you know that that's how you could get that guy out. Sometimes hard to convince a hitter that he's got a hole in his swing. But no matter how good you are, there's always something that you probably can't do and probably shouldn't or should avoid to do. And I'm with you. Somebody on her team needed to say, hey, look, this isn't your stage. This isn't your party. Let's not even say yes to this.
Yep, 100%. If we all had more of that, we'd be better off.
Yes.
Oh, there it is. Jason Fitz, thank you so much for coming on and bringing us the good stuff today. We absolutely love it. Thank you again for your time. We'll do it again soon.
Appreciate you, boys. Have a great
week. Thank you so much. It's Jason Fitz. You hear him, the Narrator Nation's Grammy winner, cutting it up on the violin. And yeah, when he played at Oakland Coliseum, the national anthem, he did so as a Juilliard grad, just ripping it up. In fact, he played the national anthem just a few months ago out in his area town. Oh, it's fantastic stuff. Jason Fitz here with us on Raider Nation Radio. Okay, we got to step aside. We're way over. But we will come back and do more on the wide receiver room, and we'll continue on and get your thoughts up at 702-365-9200. It's Raider Nation Radio.
Nobody there. He races back to the left at the 10, trying to get to the end zone. 5. Touchdown, Raiders! They tried to pass it with Myers. Nobody was home, and he ran all the way back across the field, cut inside, and it's a 5-yard Myers rushing touchdown.
Snap, handoff. Tucker on a sweep out to the left. 45-40. In space, 35-30. Cuts inside, 20. And finally brought down by Tre'Davious White at the 17. A fly sweep to the rookie. And Trey Tucker took it for 34 yards.
Or just the, like, same thing with Aiden, man. The more work he put in, the better he get at it. So, like, he getting used to doing his job, what it feel like to be in here. And I can say that, too. Like, the game slowing down. But he attacking it head on, for sure.
For the Ramparts we watch, with so gallantly streaming, and the rockets ripping.
Uh-oh. Raider Nation Radio back here on R&R 920, the morning tailgate. Vinny Bonsignor, Clay Baker, and you. Raider Nation Radio Network coming back, as well as Carl Lewis singing the anthem.
It's too bad that in a lot of quarters, that's what Carl Lewis is remembered for.
Uh-oh.
This is a disastrous national anthem, but I am here to tell you, one of the greatest athletes that this country has ever produced. That guy was... and he gets kind of lost in the shuffle, Clay, when you think about it.
Does he? Oh, I thought he's always stood out. I mean, that was...
You talk to kids. Do kids nowadays know who Carl Lewis is? Think about it.
No, they don't know too many Olympians altogether, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, but he is one of the greatest Olympians of all times that this country has produced. So, yes, he gets lost in translation. For those of us who saw it, you know, without question, we kind of remember. But this is sort of even overshadowed that a little bit to some extent. And just by the nature of... you know, how we embrace track and field athletes, who I think are some of the greatest athletes on the face of this earth. It's just something that I feel bad about, because they don't get their due. And I think Carl Lewis certainly doesn't get his due nowadays. When you talk about the greatest athletes of all time, especially here in the United States, you know, we automatically go to Michael Jordan and the NBA and football, and rightfully so, not taking anything away from anybody, but if Carl Lewis isn't on your list somewhere, your list is not very good.
It should be, especially for the longevity for him to continually to be a part of the Olympics, even into his 40s. Mm-hmm. Like, he was an unstoppable force. You just don't see it that time of day. And it's like, you know, if there's an Olympian that has also a great social media game, that's probably their best way to get to stay in the mind's eye for our younger viewers.
You know, there's a lot of football players who fancy themselves as Olympians. You know, like, oh, I could have. You know, done this or done that, and probably, you know, I'm sure, you know, there's a few of them that would have, but there's one guy to me that I always felt, and I thought this watching him in his rookie year with the Minnesota Vikings, but Randy Moss to me feels like a guy, Clay, that you could have sent down to Texas for a year, you know, when he was in his teens, let's say, you know, a senior in high school,
mm-hmm.
and trained him to be. I truly believe that he had the skills to probably be a multiple gold medal winner in the Olympics, whether it was the broad jump or you know the you know the 100 yard or the 100 the meters, you know the height or just there's probably about three or four events that if you truly trained Randy Moss to focus on those events, he could have been a gold medal winner. Like, that's one guy that I say, yes, Randy Moss would have been able to translate over to track.
Yeah,
at a high level.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's possible, and it's funny. Like, even last year when we were in the locker room and they were talking about how the how flag football got pushed into the Olympics and they are approved by the Olympics rather, and there were a lot of players that were feeling like, you know, as a National Football League player, I'm an expert and pro at my position. I could easily translate into flag.
Well, no doubt,
and win a gold medal.
No doubt, and what really a pleasant surprise for me was that there are so many guys in those locker rooms that want to do it. Because from their perspective, you've never given me an opportunity to represent my country because football doesn't translate in a world mm-hmm. sense. However, if we did it as a flag football type of a thing, it could. And I want part of that. I want to be able to wear, you know, my Team USA jersey and go out there and represent this country. There were some really interesting conversations in the Raiders locker room, and I'm sure it's not exclusive to the Raider locker room. I'm sure there was the 31 other locker rooms that had these similar conversations about, yeah, who's going to defend, who in Germany is going to defend, whoever, Devontae.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, Jakob Johnson and Jermaine Illumina were definitely thinking, all right, we're going to England, we're going to Germany respectively, we're going to make our home teams, but well, we're going to find out what kind of athlete it takes to go and win a gold medal in flag.
Now, and in their defense, and I had this conversation with Jakob, what pissed him off was that there's like this assumption that we'd be sending plumbers and construction workers out. He's like, Germany has like great athletes. England has great. Just look at the medal, that Germany wins each Olympics or England wins each Olympic. It's not like these countries are going to be sending, you know, some dude that just, you know, that is a misconception sometimes. We get a little arrogant in the United States thinking that, you know, the greatest athletes are here and they're just sending some dude that was a baker and all of a sudden now, you know, go out there. No, it's not. You know, he's like, no, we wouldn't win the gold medal in football. Obviously, there's a skill level that that countries just haven't been able to master just yet. But it ain't like we'd be sending a bunch of bums out there. There'd be great athletes. They're just not necessarily football players at this point.
That's probably how the rest of the world looks at U.S. soccer right now.
Yeah.
But because everyone feels like they have like a birthright to being great football players, great soccer players, great traditions and, decades and generations of excellence.
What I don't understand about American soccer right now is that if you look at all those players that are on our national team, they're all players that do play at high levels in Europe and overseas. So
the
rest of the world, especially fans of the sport or, you know, fellow competitors, they understand like individually there's a lot of talent on that team, players that go out and play at the highest levels. But I have no clue why we can't just put it together. Like, we have players that play at the highest level. It's not like, it's not like we don't. But then when we put them together, it just doesn't work on the world scene, and they're changing their. I see everyone celebrating that they're changing the coach. I'm like, you've changed coaches how many times, Clay?
Is it the coach's fault?
Somebody has to find
all right, we're going to stick with this guy, and we're going to try to like ride out the process with some continuity and do how other you know, countries are doing to make sure that they have a good product.
It's like this certainty that it was the coach's fault. And my argument is, you fired coaches every 4 years or so. That's obviously not been the biggest issue. It's something else that's happening. It's not the coach's fault every single time. Like, there's rejoicing that this is gonna now this. You said that the last time, and the time before that, and the time before that. So I don't know what the answer is, but you know, we are definitely we always get a flat tire when it comes to the world scene in soccer.
I love it. All right, keep them coming up on the text line and on the phones. We'll clear the lines for you to get a taste of Monster Jam 6 coming to the Thomas and Mack Center July 27, 7 p.m. Doors open, and it begins here in Las Vegas, Monster Jam 6. It shows all weekend at the TNM, but you'll get all the big names: Gravedigger, Max D, Megalodon, and more. The freestyle, the skills, the racing competitions, it's all there. It's an incredible scene. Your tickets are available online at unlvtickets.com, but I got two for you. 702-365-9200 here on Raider Nation Radio. It's Monster Jam 6.
There's two guys I'm going to point out, and obviously the obvious ones, but one guy really stood out this offseason: Trey Tucker. Different dude. He looks different, acts different, runs different, catches the ball different. Don't look at the size. Don't mention that. Watch him play. He's the biggest guy out there. He had a hell of an offseason. Came back right after the offseason program, the Super Bowl, and got in here and started working and was here every day. Blazer, we know about the speed, but everything that we talked about working on, he took that to another level. And you can see the look in his eye of a confident player, of a guy that's just going to constantly get better. He's pushing. And the guy that's right next to him, who, I get it, because you have Devontae, these guys kind of get pushed put in the background. Jacoby. Jacoby is that guy. You know, when you say, I need a dog, Jacoby's a dog. Jacoby's an alpha. Jacoby is fearless. Jacoby works probably as hard as any player on our team. And he's... his commitment, and you saw this last year, his commitment in the run game speaks volumes. Because he could be easily 100 reception, 1,000-yard receiver. But it's all those other things. It's those crackback blocks. It's those hits on the DN, the linebacker, getting his nose bloody, rolling up his sleeves, flexing on guys, setting the tone. His energy and presence might not say a lot, and you guys know him. He's kind of real slick and sly with his words. But when he speaks, you better listen.
Antonio Pierce talking about the wide receiver room. Trey Tucker and Jacoby Myers. We're back here on Raider Nation Radio. Also up on X at R&R 920 AM. Rob Meesch is going to join us, writer and author. We'll talk about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, a list that came out by ESPN about top pro athletes, all that and more. It's Raider Nation Radio. Rob Meesch joins us at 9. Raider Classics up on X says, the Raiders have had plenty of track guys on the team. James Jett and Ron Brown immediately come to mind. I'm sure there's more I'm forgetting. Oh, there's a lot. Okay, there is a lot. Willie Gault was a dash and hurdle specialist. He made the 80 Olympics as a sprinter. I remember there was Alexander Wright they had. He was often the fastest man contest winner. Terry McDaniel was a record-setting 300-meter sprinter with Tennessee and SEC. And, you know, it goes on and on. James Jett was a medalist. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing. Incredible. James Trapp, was a relay runner. It's amazing what Al Davis really respected on speed and track guys.
Absolutely. And there definitely have been crossover guys from one to the other, too, by the way. But I was thinking about guys that, like, I don't know that Randy did. I know he was a huge basketball player in West Virginia. He and Jason Williams played on the same high school team, and it was just a dazzling show. And I would see Randy when the Summer League, NBA Summer League, was still in Long Beach or Los Angeles area. He'd come out there and get some good run, and the dude could hoop. I don't know that he did anything track at any kind of a serious level, but I just felt like watching him, like, had he got streamlined into track, I think we're talking about a multiple gold award winner. And it's funny listening to, not funny, but interesting listening to Antonio Pierce talk about Jacoby Myers. Did you play pickup basketball when you were a kid? Like, literally go to the park and you pick teams and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah.
And
even did a Gus Macker 1 year.
What is that?
Well, it was like a 3-on-3 tournament.
Oh, okay. I always loved going to the local park and just, you know, obviously there would be people there that you knew, there would be people there that you didn't know, and you just, you know, you try to find pick them. You just pick, you come up with a captain and you just pick guys just eyeballing it, basically. And Jakobi Meyers reminds me of that dude that, you know, was over there on one end of the court kind of shooting by himself and, hey, we need a guy, we need a fourth guy, mm-hmm. Do you mind? You want to come out and run with us? Yeah, sure. And not think anything of it. Looking at him, and he was the quietest guy. You don't even know that he's there. And then the next thing you know, he's wearing everybody's butt out because he's defending, he's rebounding, he's dunking on people. There's just that dude at the park that you would stumble upon that you had no clue that he had that kind of game. And I feel like Jakobi is that guy because in the locker room, he walks around with this gentle smile on his face all the time, kind of easygoing, doesn't say much at all, super, super quiet, as Antonio Pierce talked about. But underneath that, and you don't have to scratch very far, is the ultimate competitor. And so he's that guy that I think, especially for Raider fans, maybe even myself a little bit, took some people by surprise last year by everything that he can do on a football field. Including obviously catch the ball and do good things, the toughness, the blocking, the being a great teammate. So yeah, he's that dude to me that unsuspecting. You don't even know what you're actually getting. You just say, hey man, we need about one more extra guy. Do you mind? Yeah, sure. Right. And then the next thing you know, you're like, either depending on what team he was on. Dang, I wish I wouldn't ask that guy to come play with us. Right. Or you're like, man, yeah, we're winning $100 today.
Yeah, we're going to take home that money.
we're taking some money.
Yeah, it's good. 702-365-9200. Keep them coming. Rob Meech will join us coming up next we'll talk about the baseball All-Star game. And I'm also going to talk about the news and notes in and around the day. Rob, a fantastic writer with Chicago Sun-Times as well as an author. He'll join us next here on Raider Nation Radio.